We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to another week. And another week of flip-flopping. Feel like we've done this for I don't know how many straight weeks, but here we are. Mason, what's up? How was your weekend?
Yeah, it's also probably good that we're recording now, and we'll jump into tomorrow night's game, but in a little bit. But probably good considering how short-handed the Pels are going to be against the Bucks in Milwaukee tomorrow night. But that's probably exactly the type of game this team could possibly win, given how the season's gone. But weekend was good. Went out to Seattle. Girlfriend had a work client out there, and tickets to one of the darkest, rainiest parts of the country in December when the days are shortest was not terribly expensive flight, and so I grabbed it and had a nice weekend out there with some with her and some grad school classmates from a couple years back. So all in all, pretty good. Not nice to be back in rainy, cold Chicago, but
was it colder or warmer than Chicago?
Definitely warmer. It was, you know, it was around 50 for most of the weekend, low 50s maybe, and it's been hovering right around freezing in Chicago. So
that's like a whole, that was at least 50 degrees more, or I mean 20 degrees more. Sorry.
Yeah, it makes a difference, trust me. but yeah, really, really fun weekends. What about you?
I learned how to play darts properly for the first time in my young life. And I know what you're thinking. How do you not know how to play darts? Well, it's like, okay, I know how to play darts. Well, I know how to play cricket in the dart world. But I never knew how to play strategically, or that, you know, there was a lot of thinking behind it, that there's an offensive game, there's a defensive game. And obviously, like, the last time I probably played darts was in college, so my form, my throws, they all weren't all that good, and I had someone instruct me on how to be a better darts player. And boy, let me tell you, these people take darts seriously, and I'm over here, you know, they're trying to minimize like their mechanics when it comes to throwing here, and like I'm over here literally trying to take free throws, and like I have a basketball for him. First, I was like pulling it back, like I was about to throw a baseball, and they're like, no, that's not what you got to do. They're like, you know, pretend like you're playing beer pong, and I'm like, I just don't have the small motor coordination in my wrist right now that allow me to throw darts in such a precise manner. So like, I was literally like tucking my elbow in, you know, having a follow through. I was working on my basketball form.
Come on, man! You've never played darts. You've never watched darts on ESPN at the Ocho?
I can't say I have. Anytime I watch that channel, I'm watching frisbee, man. That's what I do.
That's fun. Now I know not to ever challenge you at a bar in a game of darts.
You probably still beat me. I just might play a little bit more strategically. But it's crazy that there's an offensive game. So like, what you can do is you rack up points if you hit a certain space on the board three times. And that's like the loosest version of me explaining it. And if you hit it three times, like each additional time you hit it before your opponent has hit it three times, you rack up points. So like, you can either choose to monopolize a bunch of spaces on the board and then try to rack up a bunch of points, or choose to keep taking advantage of one area that you know you're hitting and your opponent doesn't have and just continue to rack up points. And then there's a defensive game where you just want to close up each area. So like, if I've hit this area three times and then you hit it three times, no one's allowed to get points in that area. So like, it's a whole different world out there. And, you know, for me, it's like shooters got to shoot. I can't play with the strategy. I'm just trying to hit the board and not the wall. And whatever I contribute is gravy.
Man, it's funny you say that, because I too hadn't played darts in a while. But up in Chicago, there's like a niche bar for anything. I mean, there's shuffleboard. There's a bar with just a bunch of ping pong tables. And there's one that my company, we did a work happy hour at 2 or 3 months ago, and it's all darts. I mean, and it's like electronic darts, and they have all these different games that I never knew existed. And I'm sure there are a couple that they kind of just made up, like that you can only do with a, you know, with a computer monitor or screen. Like there's a chutes and ladders type game where you got certain numbers, you would go up or down, and it's a kind of a race to the finish. And so it was pretty fun, but I'm sure my form was garbage.
Might have to check that out if I'm ever in Chicago. Speaking of forms that are garbage, I hear Austin Rivers is a free agent. How do you like that segue?
I was going to say, I feel like we should, once we've done maybe 5 or 10 more of these, we should go back and just try to rate the segues and see which. And I feel like there's probably going to be a couple that stand out as, hey, that was pretty clever. And there's going to be a couple that are like, man, that was rough.
I feel like this has to be one of my top 5 segues.
Well, considering we're
making segues from here on out.
Yeah, considering we've done – this is number 11 for us, congratulations. but, yeah, Austin Rivers, hey, I don't really know what's going on with this. It seems – so he was on the Suns for a hot second. They cut him. He was supposed to be going to the Grizzlies for a hot second. That's not happening anymore. Or maybe it is. I don't know. But this is really strange, and I don't – not even going to pretend to know what really the core of the issue with Rivers is, but I think there's one side that's – he's a clear rotation caliber guard off – I mean, he's absolutely not a starter, but I think for most teams in the league, he's good enough to play in your rotation. That said, it doesn't seem like anybody wants him, and certainly not for the price tag he was at, and it – I don't know – My hypothesis that I have no case things that he's not the players don't love him, and the fact that his dad gave him a ton more money than anyone else would have given him may have something to do with that. But I wonder if front offices evaluate him differently than the guys on the ground, like the coaches and players, and there's some sort of butting of heads that happen. I don't really know, but It's an interesting situation with him. And given what has happened over the past few days, I've gone from, hey, the Pelicans should think about adding him, to I don't really know if it's a move they should make, and I don't even really know who the Pelicans would cut for him, given who they've kind of tied themselves to. What do you think?
So I think there's a lot to unpack there. Like, starting from the failed trades to this supposed rumor that he's signing with the Grizzlies, but he's not signing with the Grizzlies. So I want to focus on that for a little bit. Are the Grizzlies just insane? Like, do they know how to operate with the media or how to properly leak things or just not leak things? Like, what is going on with that organization?
Yeah, I don't know. I
in the past I 4 days, they have fooled both Woj and Shams and a bevy of other reporters.
And the Phoenix Suns.
And the Phoenix Suns, and clearly the Wizards. Because first they pulled a fast one with the Brooks and not the Brooks. And then now Rivers, who they're signing, but they're not signing. And, like, let's not forget this is the same front office that, like, said they were going to trade Tyreek and they were going to move him. They're going to find a good home for him. And they couldn't move him. They just held on to him, and they lost him for nothing. And then their whole thing was like, okay, we're going to try to re-sign him with the MLE. Yeah, okay. Tyreek's going to come back to that situation after you totally dropped the ball on him.
Yeah,
they're a mess. Okay, so moving on from the Grizzlies. Rivers is available. Like you said, he has a skill set that could fit on certain teams. He would probably make the Pelicans better in a vacuum, just from a basketball standpoint, and that's only because Ian Clark is garbage. And Tim Frazier is not much better. And Frank isn't quite ready yet. But what kind of effect is he going to have in the locker room? You know, like you said, there's a possibility he might rub guys the wrong way. Word on the street was, you know, he was a guy leaking stuff in the Wizards locker room. There's been documented histories of the Clippers not getting along with him. So maybe it's just him. Maybe it's just like the way he rubs people and he's actually a nice guy. Or maybe he is actually, you know, a sneak. Who knows? But I do know is that if the Pelicans don't sign him, it's not really a big deal. It's not something to freak out about. I wouldn't be upset if the Pelicans never signed Rivers. It's not something I'm going to cry about. Right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think the tough part here, and especially with who we know are friends with each other on this Pelicans team, most notably Tim Frazier and AD, the conventional guy to cut for Rivers would be Tim Frazier, just because they play the same position. And if you had Rivers, once you get Peyton back, and I mean, that you don't, you lose any real need for Frazier, but him and AD are tight. And if Rivers is a guy who's going to cause people, I mean, if people don't like him and you've just flipped one of AD's best buddies for a guy who no one wants to be around, that's just not a great situation, regardless of what happens on the court. And hey, maybe the problem was saying Tim Frazier is the answer to our problems before and bringing him in the first place, because now are you forced to keep him? I mean, it's kind of a silly notion in a certain sense, but those two guys being such good friends, I mean, once you bring him on, are you kind of forced to keep him indefinitely? I don't know the answer, but the point is I do agree with you. It's not a situation where I think if the Pelicans don't sign Austin Rivers, assuming he would even want to come to New Orleans, it's a big deal. But
I mean, anyway. If Dell had to cut Tim Frazier for a real player, he would do it in a heartbeat. He wouldn't think twice. But for Austin Rivers,
right, exactly.
Like it's Austin Rivers, and you know, if you have something good going on, then you know the marginal benefit of getting Austin Rivers is minimal at best.
Yep. Yeah, I think we probably beat a dead horse on this topic, and I know what we wanted to spend the bulk of the time on was since we had a situation where the Pelicans only played a game or two since our last podcast, which is crazy because they've been playing every other night for a month. We could maybe spend a little bit of time talking about the game against Milwaukee, and then maybe spend some time on some of the trade ideas that our Bourbon Street Shots followers came up with. That maybe a few of the more realistic ones, and talk about even just certain players who may have caught our eye that could be attainable realistically.
Yeah, for sure. So tomorrow's game against Milwaukee is a big one, I guess. Big in the sense that, you know, Pelicans are a game under 500. They drop this, they'll be two games under. They'll be heading on the road to L.A., which is another good team. And they drop that, they're three games under, you know, 500. And things begin to snowball. And AD being in L.A., getting the attention of, oh, wow, he might come here this summer, yada, yada, yada. You know, it's not a good place to be. So if things would be easier from a media and fan perspective, and maybe even on the team, you know, if they win tomorrow. So it's important. But the problem with winning tomorrow is you have Anthony Davis as your big and nobody else.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Maybe not nobody else. You have Jahlil Okafor and you have Cheick Diallo. But The point is Mirotić and Randle are out. That's two, you know, of your people who have been in the starting lineup. Peyton's been out. We knew that. Moore's looking like he's going to play, but, you know, there's just no depth in the front court. And the quotes out of practice today were that they have experimented with some small lineups and will be looking to play those this coming game. How do you think they match up?
Yeah, I mean, not against one of the best teams in the NBA, not great. But that said, I think there are worse teams to be undersized against than the Bucks. They're a team that loves, suddenly, from last season to this season, loves to shoot threes. They space the floor really well, and Giannis just attacks at will and dunks on everybody. And so how they match up from a man-to-man defensive scheme perspective, it's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do. But I kind of expect – I would be relatively surprised if Solomon Hill isn't starting in the front court alongside AD. That they could start Jahlil. I don't know if that's wise from a pace of play and overall defensive perspective. I mean, their bigs love to shoot threes, starting with Brook Lopez, Ilyasova, all those guys.
Threes. They lead the league in 3-point attempts per game, I think. If not, if they don't, they're two. But there was a lot of buzz about them just being the new Rockets. They just launch up threes.
Yeah, and so I would like to see Jahlil get some minutes, but it's just this is not the matchup for him, I don't think. I think he might play, but that's only because they're so short-handed. But I don't know. I think Hill's the best bet at the four. Based on matchup and based on he's been starting or playing decent amount of minutes for a little while now. He's actually been kind of decent recently. And so whether or not that's hurts him too much on the glass, we'll see. But I think that's the best move for a shorthanded team at this point.
Yeah. I mean, best being like, you know, there is no other move, but do you think, so talking about Giannis, who do you think draws that assignment right off the bat?
I mean, it's got to be. I think Solomon Hill gets that matchup first. There's no good answer, obviously, for a guy like him. Conversely, there's no good answer for the Bucks on someone like AD, just because these guys are superstars for a reason. They're in matchup problems on a nightly basis for any team. But I think maybe they give Hill first crack. It's just so much to ask of Drew to guard a guy that has such a big size advantage. It's like when we watched Drew try to guard Durant in the playoffs last year. I mean, he's stellar defender. It's so hard to really match up with that much of a height advantage and so a disadvantage. So Hill is where I go to start, and it's a team effort to stop a guy like that. I mean, I think we might see a decent amount of switching. What do you think?
I don't know. I think last year when we beat the Bucks, I managed to talk to Jamel who was still with the Pelicans at the time. And I was like, you know, what'd you guys do? And he said, Giannis, you know, in the half court, he's not the greatest because what he does is he relies on a lot of bodies and contact to feel out his space and get people off balance. So if you kind of back up from him and not give him the ability to feel things out, he ends up pounding the ball. And, you know, you've built a wall towards the rim and you're daring him to take mid-range jumpers, which is, you know, he's shooting like 13% from out of 3 feet, outside of 3 feet right now. So I don't know if switching makes that job easier or just playing, you know, maybe even playing a zone like the Heat did against the Pelicans, where they threw out a zone and they were like, okay, we're going to make life difficult for Davis. And you know, you guys have to make shots, and you force the Bucks to do that, which, unfortunately for the Pelicans, the Bucks are pretty good at making their shots from the outside. So there's no, like, good solution. You want to die by Giannis, or do you want to die by the supporting cast?
Yeah, it's just, that's a strategy that worked with our archaic coaching methods last year, and I'm not sure how you make it work this year. But
I think, you know, especially the key is going to have to be, don't turn the ball over. So don't let him get in transition. Don't let him get in the open court. You know, make them play half court as much as possible.
Yeah. I mean, they're top five in pace. So they're going to want to run. And in most situations, the Pelicans would want to run. And, I mean, I think, you know, that will be another interesting aspect, because while you don't have the same roster or same degree of talent you have it with a full strength team, if you're playing small, maybe you do want to run a little more. So I'm curious to see what Gentry instructs the team to do from a pace perspective tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think the players they're putting out there are going to be good half court players for the Pelicans. So it's got to be all early offense, or you're going to see stuff stall out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, we'll see. Again, tough, very tough matchup. Fortunately, they have a little bit of rest, but that didn't really do them many favors on Sunday. So we'll see. AD could take over.
We're gonna need like a 30 ball from each one. We're gonna need him to field tomorrow night.
Yeah, no, I don't really think. I think this is a good matchup game for Drew. None of the perimeter defenders on him really scare me. Who guards Drew on their side? Is it just Bledsoe, or they throw a bigger wing on him?
I think you live with Bledsoe, and then you take turns. They have George Hill now, don't they?
Oh, yeah, true.
So George Hill, Bledsoe, Middleton. I mean, they got Brogdon. They have people. But I think with Drew is you got to have a solid rim protector to stop him, and then you have to have you pack the paint, and you play the passing lane. So that's how you stop Drew. So I think it'll be difficult, especially if the Pelicans are going small. They're probably just going to run a spread pick and roll with him as much as they can, or have him, you know, initiate off the ball with whenever Tim is on the floor or Andrew's on the floor. We'll see. I mean, I think Drew should be fine tomorrow night. I'm not, you know, when, especially like, you know, let's say when Lopez, he's not even the greatest rim protector, but let's say he's on the bench and Drew's getting some of those bench minutes. Like, who's out there protecting the rim for Milwaukee?
Yeah, and I mean, it just comes down to it. The thing that scares me is the Pelicans are going to spend most of the game with at least two non-shooters on the floor. So, if Milwaukee does what stuff like Boston did, how do you counteract it? How do you generate half-court offense? And, you know, like you said before, it's going to be a challenge.
Yep, we'll find out.
So, we'll see. But as for the remainder of this podcast, I know we got a bunch of trade ideas from some of our Bourbon Street Shots readers or In the Know listeners, and I don't know. I mean, I threw a bunch of them into a spreadsheet so we could kind of look through them easier, and we got 20 to 30 ideas of a wide range of realism. I'll call it. There's some pretty optimistic stuff in here. There's a couple of Anthony Davis trades as well, so also this is pretty pessimistic stuff in here. But anything, and if it's nothing, it's nothing. Anything caught your eye? Any specific player that you're like that you've had your eye on that came up in some of these trade ideas?
Nah.
Okay.
I think at this point, Pelicans Twitter as a collective has listed just about every NBA player in the league. So I think it'd be difficult to come up with a player that would be like, oh, didn't think of this one.
DeMarcus Cousins.
Oh, God. Is he on this list?
No.
Oh, my God. Hey, that would have been eye-popping.
Yeah. I'll throw a couple. So there, I kind of gave some raw grades to these. Just I B-ball indexed them, if you will. sorry, I couldn't help it. Not based on how much I like them, but based on how realistic I thought they were in terms of
based on your own proprietary model.
Yes, very very advanced. One I saw, it's a name that I haven't really seen thrown around a lot. Maybe you have. But it was the core of the trade was Solomon Hill for Jordan Clarkson. Huh. And I've seen a lot from about other Cavs players. You know, first it was George Hill, then J.R. Smith has obviously been talked about a lot from more national media outlets, not as much Pelicans, but I hadn't really thought about Clarkson, but his contract is very similar to Solomon Hill. I think maybe this year or next year, total like $23 million or so left. And so the idea was I'll give that. The account was JShanks23 is the account that sent this over. And so either I think it was set up a pick or two, and I'm not sure, not really specific on first or second, but I can't imagine
Let's assume second round picks.
I was going to go there. So, and he may have said seconds. I don't have the tweet up in front of me, but thoughts on Clarkson and they said Solomon Hill and 2 second round picks for Clarkson. Is that realistic? And B, would you even consider it?
You said they have the same amount of years left.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say that's realistic. Would I consider it? Clarkson's just one of those players that, like, what does he do outside score? And is he even that good at it? And it seems like we're always attracted to those type of players. Rodney Hood's another one. It's like, okay, Clarkson, he comes off the bench. He can be, I guess, a lead ball handler, but he won't create for others. And his sole job will be to score. He isn't the best three-point shooter.
That's putting it politely. Well, he's about Solomon Hill. He's 33.6 for his career, and he's 31.3 this season. But he's a career free throw shooter of over 80%. So, I mean, he can shoot. It's just that it hasn't translated to the three-point range for whatever reason. And
he can get streaky. Like, he'll have games where he gets hot. But
yeah.
You know, offensively, there's no question he's a much better player than Hill. I just don't think we need offense on this team. I don't. And if the only thing you provide, the only thing of value that you add is offense, then I just don't see you being a good fit on the team. And for that reason, yeah. I'd rather hang on to my 2 second round picks and hope to use Solomon Hill elsewhere. That's my thoughts. What about you?
Fair enough. I'm a little closer to saying yes to it than it seems like you are. The point about the second round picks, I will get this off my chest. People tend to undervalue second round picks in the sense that they think, oh, well, it's just a second. We can go buy one of those. It's not a big deal. And so, I think if you're the Golden State Warriors and you're like your second round pick is 59th or 60th every year, that's one thing. And you can go the undrafted route and just as easily. But these are assets, and some teams, particularly small market teams that don't just spend freely on like, oh, sure, no problem, $3 million, second round pick, done. They're assets, and if you include 2 seconds in a trade for Clarkson, for example, you can't just replace them. You can't just throw money at it and replace it. So your point is well taken, and I want to make sure people understand that. That said, I think Clarkson would help this team. That we look at even recently the bench scoring, it's been so one-sided, and I can't remember who, I don't know if it was Jim or someone else, or maybe Kushner tweeted out how this bench scoring has been even worse than it has been for the first 15, 20 games, which is saying something, or this differential. So whether that goes more on the defensive end or the offensive end, for the differential to be as big as it is, it's both. But I do think that a guy like Clarkson who you can bring on off the bench and trust to score is would be valuable. How much he overlaps with a guy like Julius Randle, for example, and if you're bringing both those guys off the bench is a fair question too.
What you're doing is, hey, Anthony, instead of going to the Lakers, we brought the Lakers to you.
Right? I was wondering where you're going with that, but that's perfect. Or maybe we can just go get D'Angelo Russell too, right?
Hey, man. We're going to get to that because that's a name that's in some of these trades, and that's a name that I think I threw out there as well in one of my trade suggestions. So we'll get to D'Lo.
All right. Let's see. Another one that I thought was reasonable. All right. So it's it comes from a caffeine disaster, which sounds – there are a few worse disasters, I think, than a caffeine disaster. So I like the handle, and it's a Miami Heat trade with Goran and Rodney Magruder for Nico and Wes Johnson. And so, if you had thrown this at me in October, I would have said, "Nah, Pelicans definitely need more," and maybe they still do, but I don't know. What I mean, you give Goran's got a year left after this one, right? And it's not. It's not cheap, and if I remember correctly. So you give the Heat 2 expirings, but one of those expirings has you have bird rights on who you can go over the cap to re-sign. And so Goran's got 18 mil this year, and he's got 19 mil next year. And he's been kind of hurt this year, and so maybe it's not fair to judge him in the last couple months, but I don't think his value probably isn't as high now as it was at the start of the season, for example. And he's 32 years old. He'll be 33 in May. So what are your thoughts? I know we talked internally with the other Bourbon Street Shots guys about Goran, but what do you think?
I like Goran a lot. I think he'd be a really good fit for this team. Magruder's not bad as well. He actually ended up hurting the Pels a lot this last game where I think he had like 4 offensive rebounds. So he's an effective guy. I think in a vacuum – it's a good trade that I would probably pull the trigger on. The only thing I hesitate on is my personal bias and preference for Mirotić. I want to hold on to Mirotić if possible. And if I'm moving Mirotić, I want a player that's a cut above Goran. Like, Goran's an all-star in the East, right? But like you said, he's 33 and exiting his prime. So if Goran was 28... I'd do that. No problem.
Yep.
You know, so if it was and so if there's someone better or younger than Goran, sign me up for the trade. Now, I'm going to flip it. Would it still be realistic if you took Mirotić out of the trade and you added Randle and Miller to match salary?
I don't think so, only because they're going to do better than that for Dragic. I mean, they're...
So do you think league-wide Mirotić has more value than Randle?
Yes.
You do? You do think so?
I do. And I think it's because Randle only has value on a subset of teams because you don't gain any sort of advantage for having him at the end of the season if you're trying to resign him next year. So if you're trying to get Randle... it's you're making a playoff push for this year, and you think his skill set will help you win. And there are teams, I haven't thought through which teams, but there are teams where that is certainly going to apply. But the fact that you can grab Nico and have him help and then also have his bird rights, I think that provides a little more value. But that's my opinion.
Fair enough. I'm hoping, I guess maybe I'm being optimistic. I'm hoping that the way Randall is playing is signifying that he's just worth more and he has higher potential than Mirotić for the league. And I hope that, you know, if someone asks for him in a trade, it nets us something good. That's my hope.
Yeah, I hear that, and I think it's possible. I just don't at this point. I just don't see. It's because I don't think the market's as big for a guy like him. Just because it's a half season rental as opposed to Nico, where it is a half season rental, but it's also you have other cap advantages to bring him in. So if Randall outplays Nico to an extreme degree, that's probably one, that's probably bad for the Pelicans, and two, then maybe the he becomes more of an asset, but even so, probably not a significant one, right?
Yeah, we'll see. I think I'm leaning that Randall has more value. I think I'm going to be in that camp. I think he does have more value just because of his youth and his upside, and some team, there's going to be a lot of teams to cap space this summer, and so some team that will have the cap space to retain him may view him as an attractive asset, because then, you know, they can evaluate their fit pretty early and yeah, just have a little jump on the recruiting process when it comes to the summer.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends how much you weight that being an advantage, right? If you want to kind of get a trial run and see if he fits, and you think that if he does fit well, he'll be more likely to sign with you, then yeah, that's realistic. But it all comes back to how much stock you put into this player. Now knows our system, and so he's more likely to sign with us than team B. So
since we are on this topic and we mentioned D'Lo, figure might as well bring up the trade proposal that I brought up earlier. I think it was a day ago, 2 days ago, whenever. So it's two separate trades. The first one is a deal with the Brooklyn Nets. And I'm shipping out Randall, Miller, and Etuan Moore in return for Damari Carroll and D'Angelo Russell. No picks involved on either side, just straight up. Now, before we get to the second part, do you think that is a realistic deal, unrealistic deal? What are your thoughts or hesitations?
So it was funny, when you first said that trade, I said I pushed back on you significantly because I didn't see what was in it for Brooklyn, because I thought they were a bottom feeder in the East. Because, and to be fair, for the one or two Brooklyn fans that are listening, I was very high on them after the Pelicans beat them in that train wreck of a game in the fourth game of the season, before they lost LeVert to his devastating injury. I thought this team was going to be a playoff team. I did. And then they lost him, and their season kind of unraveled, if as much as it can unravel early on. And then after I said that to you, you replied, they're basically right outside the playoff race. And I said, huh? So they won five straight games.
Six
I had
straight,
no idea.
They just beat the Lakers tonight.
Did they? Wow. Oh, man. That's, yeah. So all of a sudden,
Russell revenge game, 22 points, 13 assists.
And so all of a sudden, it makes more sense for this team to try to add pieces that will help them win right now. And not that they should jeopardize or sacrifice any futures, you know, jeopardize their future for an eighth seed right now. But I get it more. I still don't really buy into the pieces. I think you might need a third team for that because, I mean, like I said, Randall's on a one-year deal effectively. And, I mean, Brooklyn's a big market. If he likes playing there, I think maybe they get an incremental benefit to having him there if he fits. Also, Etuan Moore going over there, I said this to you there, and I'll say it here. They already have Etuan Moore, and his name's Joe Harris.
Yeah, but they play him at small forward sometimes. I mean, Etuan's a versatile guy. He can fit in their lineups. Especially if you're getting rid of Russell. So, like, if you get rid of Russell, they're playing Shabazz Napier off the bench for the point guard. And they're going to need someone that can shoot and do Russell-y things. Russell, you know, is a great passer and actually is a great ball handler. But, you know, they're going to need someone in that two-guard spot to absorb some minutes. And if not, they can flip him. But, you know, that's the construct of it. And yeah, the sell with Randall is, you know, he could be a corner piece for them. They already have Jared Allen, who's going to be a great rim protector. He's blocking poster dunks right and left. He blocked LeBron tonight trying to dunk on him. And so Randall needs a rim protector next to him, but it gives them that one front court guy that they don't have that can just take over games if they need to, you know?
Yeah.
They have a lot of shooting. They have a lot of perimeter players who can shoot. They don't have that front court guy that can just dominate inside, and that's Randall. And he's a young piece that fits with their overall you know, youth movement that they have going on.
Yeah, it's and the kind of the coincidental part of that is the couple guys they had before in the front court being, and they, I mean, they still have Kenneth Fareed, and they also waived Dwight Howard. But these are two guys who are, you know, in past years, their calling cards were, I think, just you talked about for Randall, and they're definitely not that anymore. So I think in that respect, he definitely fills a void for them. And it's a type of player they don't currently have. So I do get the on-court fit for him for sure. So again, I just don't know. I think Russell and Carroll will have suitors come February. I wouldn't be shocked at all if both are not on the team at the time of the trade deadline.
Do you think both fetch a first round pick? What's
no.
Agent? No, right?
No. Definitely not.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, in any case, the second part of that trade is moving Solomon Hill and Wesley Johnson for either, depending on whatever's more realistic, whichever team kind of bites, and a first round pick with some protections as well. So Solomon Hill, a first round pick with some protections, and Wesley Johnson for Nikola Vucevic and Jonathan Simmons on the Magic, or Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday on the Bulls.
Yeah, and so it makes sense to me. I don't think the Magic say yes to that. I think Vucevic is a guy who you can by himself, I think, is probably worth more than a first and a salary dump that's going to give you an extra year of dead cap in the form of $13 million or so that Solomon Hill's going to be owed.
Fair.
That said, I think
the Bulls... But also, Jonathan Simmons has been awful this year. Like, bad. Like, shooting 35% from the field and 24% from three, bad. Like, bottom five in RPM, like 425 out of 430. You know, like, that's how bad he's been.
Okay, but also his salary for 2019-20 is only $1 million guaranteed. So
is it? I thought it was the full six.
Nah, I just pulled it up, so I didn't know that until 10 seconds ago. But I don't think they'll be. I mean, they'll care too much about moving him. But that said, the Chicago Bulls side of it makes total sense. Robin Lopez is. I mean, I know you and I both have talked separately at length about the Lopez brothers and how kind of team-centered players they are and how their individual rebounding numbers aren't going to speak for the team's rebounding. I mean, they do the dirty work, they box out, and teams play better with them on the court. And so him and Justin Holiday make a lot of sense for this team. I wouldn't give up too much for Lopez. He's not a rim protector really per se, which is kind of what this team might need off the bench. But he is.
He was. I mean, I think it depends on how you play him. I think when he was with Portland and they They used him in the drop coverage. He was quite decent when he wasn't forced to get up out there on the perimeter and move his feet around. He's just forced to sit back. He was really effective for them. So I think there's a role he can play there.
Fair enough. My main concern just with overall with the structure is that I don't want to use a first to get off of Solomon Hill's contract. That's kind of my position. I feel like I was kind of on the fence earlier, maybe in the preseason coming leading into the season, but I feel pretty strongly about it now in the sense that if I'm moving the first, I want to move it with, say, Etuan and Wes Johnson and bring back a better player than I would if I'm trading Solomon Hill and Wes Johnson, where a team is forced to take on an extra year of Solomon Hill's contract. And the logic behind that is if next year comes and Anthony Davis is not here, I don't really give a shit about Solomon Hill's last year of his contract. I mean, if you want to stretch him, stretch him. I mean, I just don't. And so I think you put the best team around AD you can now, and you don't put an unnecessary weight on that best asset you have, which is a first round pick, to get off of that contract. And so that's kind of where I'm at. I think all the players you've targeted make a lot of sense. They're exactly what this team needs right now. And if you're not going to be able to get a star, which is wishful thinking anyway, and I don't think that we should be thinking about constructing trades that get Kemba Walker or get Bradley Beal, because that would be awesome, but it's going to take a lot. I mean, two first-round picks at minimum, maybe three, if you really want to say that we're in the running for these guys. And so that's just kind of where I sit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fair position to be in, right? If you're moving the pick, it better be for someone good rather than just dumping. And I agree with that. I think if I had a preference, I want to move. My preference would be to make a big swing, try to get a star, quasi-star, that level of player. And I think I've been pretty consistent with that. I think the Pelicans need that third guy next to AD and Drew to kind of push them over, because it's easier to surround those guys with role players than, you know, try to fill the cracks in between AD and Drew. But the Pelicans are kind of running out of runway. They need to get better. A star or a star that they want might not become available. And if he does, he might not be obtainable. So with that in mind, my idea behind this trade was to get guys that provide needs and skill sets this team currently lacks. So let's assume the Magic trades out the window and you got the you went with the Bulls and you got Holiday and Lopez back. So from those two guys, like you said, we have Lopez, who's a great screen setter, a great offensive rebounder, a great guy who boxes out, and he can offer rim protection. He can play with both Davis and preserve his body from playing center, and he can play with Mirotic. And so from a fit perspective, he's good, but those things that I mentioned, the screen setting, the boxing out, the offensive rebounding, those are skills that we need desperately that we kind of don't have. Randall gives you some rebounding. Randall offensively rebounds as well, but he's not setting those hard screens. He's not always boxing out. He's not the defender Lopez is. And again, it's just like if you have Lopez, you play through AD more. And I think long term, that's just better for the team's health. And then likewise, Justin Holiday, self-explanatory. He's a wing. He's Holiday. He's Drew's brother. Immediately gives you someone with size at that area that is not a total offensive zero. He's gotten pretty good at shooting threes. And then if you combine that with the other trade where you're getting back Russell, who is a point guard, which the Pelicans need, and, you know, he can pass, he can shoot, he can create, and then you're getting back Damari Carroll, who's another wing that he's not an awful rebounder. He's not incompetent offensively, and he just gives you size at that position. And so you walk away with two wings, a legit 7-foot center, and a point guard. And all of a sudden, that looks like a much more well-rounded team than the one that we currently have. And the best part about it, I think the biggest sell, is all those guys are coming off the books at the end of this year. Right? I mean, like, D'Angelo would be a restricted free agent, but you have the option to renounce his rights. So if you wanted to, you could walk out of this year with only AD and Drew on your books. That's it. And now you can say, like, well, you know, no star players coming here, and cap space is overrated. And it is to a sense, especially in this market. But it gives you a ton of flexibility. And if you want to bring any of those guys back, you have the space to do it. You know? And then, like, that 1% chance that, you know, Kyrie's like, hey, maybe New Orleans would be a great place to play. He's not going to say that. But, you know, he also said the earth was flat. So, but you know what I mean? Like, the 1% chance that someone sees, like, okay, it's AD and Drew, and we have $60 million in cap space. Let me go over there.
Yeah.
It gives you flexibility. And then on top of that, if AD tells you this summer, it's like, all right, you know what? I'm done. And you trade him. Great. You have a clean slate. Like, your books are totally clean besides whatever you get back for AD. And you can use all that space to just absorb crappy contracts from teams and get more draft assets. You're just setting yourself up for the future. And that's, like, you know, it's like a dual thing. It's like, all right, it helps you now. And it doesn't hamstring you in the future. And that's the kind of move. If I had to make a patchworky move, it wouldn't be for someone like Bazemore, who is going to be on your books for 3 years. It wouldn't be for someone like Batum, who's making $27 million per year, and he's got 3 or 4 more years left. It'd be for people who can also clear my books effectively. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. And that's kind of the situation you just described. Like, if they had the trade AD, like, I'm not, again, not as concerned if Hill's the one guy you've got on your books. If you traded Etuan and you've got Drew and Solomon Hill and that's it, I don't care about stretching Hill over whatever, that $4 million a year for 3 years. I mean, that's not going to, if you're talking about a ton of cap space on a $110 million cap, whatever. If you're hitting the reset button, that shouldn't matter too much.
Yeah, I mean, but if you're hitting the reset button, you're not stretching him anyway because you're bad. You can afford to eat cap space. What are you going to do with it?
Well, I'm saying if you're trying to use your cap space to bring in assets,
if you think
you need that that space, and you can go ahead and stretch them. But that all makes sense. I would say if I could, instead of just proposing something way different, if I could tweak it, I think I would, again, hold back the Solomon Hill part of it. So I would say, hey, figure out a way to go get Justin if you can. And then I'm looking at Atlanta, and not for Bazemore, not for Lynn. I'm looking at Dwayne Dedmon over there. And I wonder what it'll take to go get him. And so, like, could you do Wes Johnson, Diallo in a second and get Dedmon from them, who's expiring, making about $7 million.
Let's just briefly talk about what teams, you know, typically by the deadline, there's some teams like, we need a rim protector. And so, like, those guys are in demand. I just don't feel like there's any team in that situation this year.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of where I am too. And
like,
so
you could maybe argue Washington, but Washington's all kind of jacked up.
Yeah, and what I think Atlanta, and I think Atlanta would rather have Diallo than him, than this guy I'm about to mention, but is there a better destination for Julius Okafor than the Atlanta Hawks?
Oh, my God.
Because I don't think there is. I think if you include him in a trade for Dedmon or something like that, maybe there's not that much upside, but there's no downside. Either A, he continues to be the player he has been, and he's a huge net negative when he's on the floor and your tank improves, or B, you give him real minutes and he's actually looks like an improved player, and now you have him under a minimum contract for the following season, and maybe you can flip him. And so
I think
the Hawks make a good trade partner for a guy like Dedmon. And I think Wes Diallo or Wes Jahlil in a second maybe gets it done. And that's who I would go for rather than a guy like Lopez, who's making $15 million this year. I mean, Dedmon's at half that, and you don't need a first-round pick to do it. And if you got to keep Solomon Hill, you got to keep Solomon Hill. Yeah, fine. But that's kind of where I would go. That makes getting Justin Holiday harder because he's coming as part of that whole trade package. But
so if you could do Wes and one of, you know, Diallo or Okafor. You could probably do Miller and the other for Justin Holiday.
Yeah, I just think he's going to have a bigger market. I mean, there are going to be a lot of things.
What is he going to fetch?
Justin Holiday's not going to fetch a first. I mean, I know that, but it's...
second round pick he's going to fetch? Like, not that big of a one.
Tough to say, because I don't really...
Tyreek Evans last year, averaging like 18 and 8 or whatever he was averaging, was offered two first round picks. I mean, not two first, two second round picks. My bad. 2 seconds for Tyreek. Like, I just don't think teams are going to... Like, yeah, Houston to be like, okay, yeah, give us Justin Holiday. They don't really have small salary to send out, nor do they have, like, great young assets. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I get that in a vacuum, if you squint at him, he's what every team needs, but who's giving up anything for him?
I don't know, and like I said, the tough part of that is knowing which teams own whose second-round picks. I just think that there are going to be more teams kind of in the running for a guy like him. Like, even the Rockets, and I'm not saying they have any better assets to trade than New Orleans does, but he'll be tougher to pry away, and I think I think going and getting a backup rim protector, a fourth big from Atlanta – I think you're bidding against fewer people, and that makes sense to me. But the wing, I feel like the whole conversation of adding wings is just going to be, I just think it's really tough to gauge the market right now and how many wing buyers you have. And it's probably going to be high. And so you may see it. I'm not sure what you'll see.
And I agree with you on, I have no idea what's going to come next, but I think it's a good spot to end the pod. We've talked about a lot of trades, and then we could probably hit up some of the rest of the suggestions for the next pod.
Yeah. There are a lot of trades in here that are, and I'm not in the business of putting anyone on blast, so I'm not going to do it. For proposing kind of silly trades. That said, there are some lopsided deals in here, and, however, there are some common players that popped up, and so we could definitely spend part of a pod talking about these players and how they'd fit. But yeah, I mean, a lot of these other trades are just the other team that the Pelicans are trading with would almost instantly say no. So just, you know, keep it in mind. The other team has to say yes, and not just it can't just be a fair trade in a vacuum between team one and team two. It's got to be, you know, there are 28 other teams who probably want or would be interested in this player, and if the Pelicans can't make the best offer, they're not going to get it. So,
I mean, just think of it this way. Like, when someone gives you a really crappy offer for AD, what do? You laugh at them, right?
So when I get these, so when I get these Kemba Walker trades, just remember that. That's their – obviously, he's nowhere near as good as AD, but that's their AD right now. They've had him since he got drafted. No one wants to part with him. And – they're not going to trade him for peanuts. But he is a guy that came up a couple of times. So, can definitely talk about that in a future pod. But yeah, it's funny. I went into this podcast thinking we only had a game or two to talk about. This might be one of the slower ones that we don't talk about much of any real value, but I think this was informative. I think I had more fun doing this one than I thought I would.
I think sometimes you just need a change of pace. Like, yep. There's only so much you can talk about when it comes to winning and losing.
Or doing it in alternating fashion for the past 16 years.
Yup.
Cool. All right. That's a wrap, folks.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.